This episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of Locked On, and make every moment more. Locked On is the new partner with FanDuel. Go to FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. And let's get started on this episode of Locked On MLB.
You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all of Major League Baseball. I am your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. If you don't believe me, look at my lower third. You can call me Sully. I am an Emmy-nominated television producer, easy for you to say, who has been a podcaster here on the Locked On Podcast Network for the last five seasons. I've been doing this for over a decade, but I've been doing it here in Locked On since the beginning of the 2019 season. Aha. Back then, we didn't know any Astros were banging on a trash can. You can follow me at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Follow the podcast at Locked On MLB Pods, Twitter and Instagram. But as you can tell, he's back, sitting right over there. Hair looking good. It's my partner at least once a week. Tell the people who you are.
Yeah, that's right. For the YouTube audience, just got a fresh cut right before this podcast. So I'm looking good. Got the one curl down right now. Miller Thomas, host of Locked On Diamondbacks, of course. Don't have any Emmy, you know, nominations yet. Maybe one day we will. But follow my personal account on Twitter, of course, at CreatorThomas24. Follow the show account, Locked On Diamondbacks, Twitter, Instagram. And, of course, please follow the YouTube channel, Locked On Diamondbacks, as well on there.
Well, we're recording this on the 25th of January, probably dropping on the 26th. I'm not going to tell Millard how to do his business. But a couple of pieces of news I want to talk about right now. Hey, the Boston Red Sox could not have handled their shortstop situation any more horrifically. No. They had a homegrown, beloved, fan-favorite all-star who is part of multiple World Series champions, one being a little shady. He heard that, Astro fans. But the other not, being one that was Boston strong. Xander Bogaerts, the X-Man, Xander Bogaerts, someone whose name, like Noma, was built to play in Boston, played a decade with the Red Sox, was right there to be signed to an extension throughout the last few seasons. Boom. He's in San Diego. Oh, but don't worry. The Red Sox were smart. You see, they were super smart. And what they did is they got an insurance plan, which was they signed Trevor Story, or as they call it in Massachusetts, Trevor Story, to come in, and he would play second base. And when Xander skedaddled, which eventually they were going to, Trevor Story would move over to shortstop, and everything would be Jake. Except they forgot to check if he was healthy, and he's not, and he's going to miss, if not the whole season, then a big chunk of the season. Oh, if only they could find a star shortstop. Why can't they acquire players like Xander Bogaerts? Well, today, the Red Sox, actually, it was the other day, Adalberto Mondesi.
We need the Boston accent.
Adalberto Mondesi. There we go. Who had one of my favorite little, for the lack of a better word, footnotes in baseball history. He is the first person ever to make his major league debut in the World Series.
Oh,
he was part of the 2015 Royals. He's a minor leaguer for the 2015 Royals. He got called up but didn't get to see an at-bat down the stretch. And there was a series of injuries to the Royals roster. And they put him on instead of Johnny Gomes, who probably was a more veteran bat, because they wanted to have someone on the bench who could give them a little bit of, you know, a little bit of depth, you know, in various positions. And he came up and struck out as a pinch hitter in the World Series against the Mets. So he got a World Series ring before he played in his first major league game. So there you go. The man has a ring, and then went on to make his big league debut. He wound up playing the last parts of the last seven seasons, leading the league in stolen bases, by the way, in the truncated 2020 season, with a whopping 24. Ricky Henderson used to call that a week, but he got 24.
Also led the league in caught steals that season too.
That is true. That is true. You know, he only played 15 games last year, so you know the man is durable. He was acquired by the Red Sox in exchange for pitcher Josh Taylor. He's frequently injured. He had a torn ACL that basically wiped out his season last year. He had left shoulder surgery and an ACL that required surgery. So clearly they are getting the next Cal Ripken Jr. in terms of durability. Oh, congratulations, Red Sox. You now have two injury-prone shortstops to fill the hole. I don't get it.
Yeah, and it's hard to talk yourself into if you're a Red Sox fan because, like you mentioned, that durability with Mondesi, when you look at the games played for his career, only one season, 2019, was the only time he's played over 100 games at any point in his career, and that was only 102 games. So this is someone that has barely been healthy throughout his career. He has been a speedster, but coming off the season he just had, you have to worry about maybe the speed has diminished a little bit, and the Red Sox just don't have many options in the middle of the infield. Trevor Story still sounds like a little confident that he's going to come back and play at some point during the season, but it's already feeling like a lost year for the Boston Red Sox. They feel like the worst team in that division. And when you look at this trade, yeah, they acquired a shortstop, something that they really needed, but they gave up Josh Taylor, who had like a really solid season last year at the Red Sox. And the Red Sox bullpen has been their biggest issue the last couple of years. So it's like you're trading away bullpen pieces. You're DFAing guys also in that bullpen. I know you want to talk about Matt Barnes a little bit.
Yeah. But
the bullpen has been the weakness of this Red Sox team, and we know the middle of the infield is a weakness too, but you can't trade weakness for weakness. Like, that's not going to help you if you're the Boston Red Sox, so I just don't understand. And we've been saying that for all offseason, in the last couple offseasons. We don't understand the plan of the Boston Red Sox, and this is another move that shows that.
Well, and it's something that my mom, I know, is listening to this show. My late father had a saying, which was, you don't solve a problem by creating a problem.
Yeah.
And someone should Martin write Roman. That in Latin and put that above the Red Sox front office entry there. They acquired Adam Duvall as well. Lest we forget, Adam Duvall was part of that weird Braves outfield when they won the World Series in 2021, where they acquired their entire outfield. Soler, Rosales, and Jock Peterson, Adam Duvall, none of them were on the team when they broke camp, and they were all celebrating, came up with huge hits. Lest we forget, Duvall, I know we're not supposed to look at runs batted in, but he did lead the National League in the category in 2021, splitting his time between the Marlins and the Atlanta Braves. Last year, he only played in 86 games, still had some power, still had some pop, not nearly as effective, and was not available in the postseason when the Braves made a shockingly quick exit to the Philadelphia Phillies. But again, this is and I mentioned, or you had hinted at Matt Barnes, who you have to go all the way back to 2021 to see that he was at one point an all-star reliever.
Yeah.
And he had a bad year last year. He went from being their all-star closer when they wound up being two wins away from going to the World Series, played on the World Series team that won, that Astros fans was a little bit shady. I'm the first to admit that. He played nine seasons with the Red Sox. Yeah, really eight seasons because he only had a cup of coffee in 2014. But he's been DFA'd, which shows you how quickly things can turn around from a reliever. All-star team in 2021, cut from the roster after 2022. you know, this is one reason why you probably shouldn't sign relievers to whopping long-term deals. And, you know, relievers should probably have that little bit of a cluttered baseball card where they play for different teams every year. I think Barnes will find a home. I think a team will take a flyer on him because, you know, he's not that far removed. And maybe, you know, dusting himself off or a change of scenery or something. If I were a team that, you know, if I were a team that has thoughts of contending in their head, well, the D-backs are certainly one. I always go back to Cleveland, which is a team that has images of winning a World Series dancing in their head because of the division and because of their talent. Could always use some additional pitching depth. Maybe the Angels, if God forbid they do anything. I don't know. Send him over to the D-backs. He's not going to cost much. But still, so I don't know what's going on with their outfield. I don't know what's going on with their infield. I don't know what's going on with their bullpen. This with the Red Sox. Why are they, you know, they're acting like they're the Marlins at this point. And, you know, picking up the, you know, broken pieces of Justin Turner and Kenley Jansen. They are more Dodgers on the team than there are Red Sox.
Which is,
I just don't get this, what they're, this team, what they're doing.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if the D-backs want to put a claim in on Matt Barnes, because don't forget Mike Hazen, that connection to the front office with the Boston Red Sox, was definitely there for the scouting of Matt Barnes. And the D-backs have had a little bit of a philosophy shift this offseason with the bullpen, want to go after hard-throwing guys. Matt Barnes, still mid-90s fastball kind of guy, all-star last year. So I think he's still an interesting and intriguing pickup. But yeah, when you look at the Boston Red Sox offseason, like Mondesi's young, but when you look at the rest of the moves, like the Red Sox got pretty old this offseason. Kenley Jansen's 35, Justin Turner's 38, Chris Martin's 36, Corey Kluber's going to be 37, Adam Duvall's 34. Like, this is just a really old roster now, and it makes you wonder if they're just trying to keep it cheap. Of course, you're paying a lot of money to Devers, but maybe you're just trying to slow cook this thing over the next couple years, get some of those other contracts off the book, and then maybe retool this thing with some other pieces. Like, obviously I can't predict the plan of this Red Sox because they've been so up and down with who they want to keep and who they're deciding to keep and let go, because you could have easily kept a JD Martinez. If you just want old guys in the locker room that can produce and still be a veteran presence, like JD Martinez for $10 million, like there's no reason you could have done that deal.
Or Nady Eovaldi, you know, if you're going to, I mean, if they're going to have older guys, why not have older guys who know what they're doing there? Or just go completely young and say, hey, we're going to keep Devers and a couple of veterans, and we're just going to call up the Worcester team and see what we got.
And I know
we're not going to, just basically saying, if we're not going to win this year, and then nobody can look me in the eye and say, this is an organization that's trying to produce a pennant contender this year. Yeah, I know it worked in 2013 when you brought in the Napolis, who, by the way, got a Hall of Fame vote, and the Steven Drews and the Johnny Gomeses and the Shane Victorinos. But that team also had Ortiz. That team also had Pedroia. That team also had John Lester. That team also had Clay Buchholz. And they caught lightning in a bottle with Koji Uehara. So they had some pieces that were already in place there. I don't see those places in place here. And it's my least favorite kind of team, which is, we're not good enough to win now. We don't have the pieces to be in place for 2 years from now. So that's a bit of a feathered fish. If you're going to have a year where you're pretty sure you're going to finish in fifth place, which they probably will, I'd be fine with that if there was a whole bunch of young kids out there that you're saying, okay, we stink, but look at that young kid. In a couple of years there, he's cutting his teeth, and Devers is leading the way in the infield. Kiki Hernandez, you have a couple of veterans there, but the rest of it are young kids. And you're like, okay, by 2025, this is going to be a real solid contender. I think Red Sox fans will be fine with that, but not this.
Yeah, and even if you're not really trying to compete, I would rather just keep the quality pieces on my team so they can be assets that can move at the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. Like, I know you want to talk about the best remaining free agents later. Like, someone like Michael Wacha had a really fantastic season with the Boston Red Sox. He's not going to break the bank. You could have easily brought him back this year. And if you see the season's not going the right way, trade him to a contender. Just give back some mid-tier prospect who's not even going to be that good, but at least you're building the foundation of treasure chest pieces and building toward the future and adding younger assets, because you never know. Sometimes those random deals where you get a player to be named later, sometimes those guys turn into future all-stars and stuff like that. So if you could just keep adding pieces and assets and young guys to your farm system and to this team, like, that's what you should be doing if you're the Boston Red Sox. Right now, like you said, they're in sports purgatory. They're in no man's land, which is always the worst place to be. With the new way that the MLB draft is working now, where it's like more of a lottery system, like, if you're going to get that top pick, you have to be really bad. And the Red Sox are still making moves where it's like, yeah, we know we're not going to win the World Series, but we're not trying bottom out either. They're not doing the Cincinnati Reds or the Oakland A's where it's like, we're coming into this year and we know we have no chance of winning a World Series, so we're going to put the worst product on the field as possible. Boston Red Sox are not doing that. They're still trying to salvage their product and what they're going to put on the field, but we all know it's not really going to amount to anything that's really that important.
Yeah, I think, by the way, I'd put money on the Red Sox finishing in fifth place this year. And if you're putting any sort of money down, we got a new name for you. Do you know what it is? It's FanDuel. We're excited about the new deal that we have with FanDuel. They are the number one sports book in America. And if you're new to FanDuel, that's even better. They have so many great features that make sports betting fun and easy. Miller, do you have any thoughts on FanDuel and what they should do with building up, especially this weekend, which, by the way, you know I'm not a huge football guy, but I always love the conference championships because I love seeing that excitement of the home team possibly seeing off a team to the Super Bowl. You can't be call yourself alive and not be excited by that.
Oh, yeah, I love FanDuel. They take money out of my pocket every single weekend during the NFL season. Sometimes it goes back in. Usually it doesn't. But the great thing right now, Sully, that FanDuel is doing, that if you place a $5 bet, you'll get back $150 in free bets. Can you believe that? They're giving you free money, FanDuel is. They can use to place more bets and hopefully win some more money. And FanDuel always does this thing where if you're like a new signup, they're going to give you like an automatic bet once you start. They're going to give you like a Steph Curry scores 2 points tonight, you're going to double your money. So FanDuel, when you first sign up, you're getting free money. You're getting easy bets. It's a great platform, and I'm so excited to partner with them.
Well, guess what? If you're football fans, place your first $5 bet. You get $150 in free bets, win or lose, at FanDuel.com/LockedOn. Make every moment more with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NFL. All right. Hey, Miller Thomas, our mutual friend and fellow Locked On MLB podcaster, Stacey Gatsoulias, yes, who was actually the person who dragged me into this whole Locked On world a couple of years ago.
That's funny.
She's written a great piece. It's available on WUSA9.com. We'll put a link for it on our respective Twitter pages, talking about the best remaining free agents by position. We're going to give Stacey a shout out on this, but I'll also give Peter Pratt a shout out on this, the host of Locked On Marlins, because we've been saying this whole offseason what the Marlins should do, because they have the pitching staff, and now they have the American League batting champion with still a decent pitching staff. You're basically swapping Johnny Cueto for Pablo Lopez at this point. If you can have decent starting pitching, and if you put a major leaguer at every position, you have a decent chance of at least breaking even, at least having, you know, winning 81, 82 games. I look at Cleveland. Same thing. Look around and say, like, hey, look, you can pitch. Cleveland actually has a great pitching staff. And if they just had a major leaguer at every position, blah, blah, blah. So let's open up her Ivor article right over here. My setup here, it looks like Minority Report with all these different screens I have going on here. Again, I got to get these references that you can understand. Yeah. Let's go through what Stacey said are the best, according, and this is great what they did, using Fangraphs WAR, which you and I are not beholden to WAR, but it's I treat WAR like Wikipedia. It's a good starting off. If you're doing research, it's a good starting off point. And what they did there, which I did appreciate, is combining the WAR from 2021 and 2022. So taking advantage of some of the fact that someone may have either had injuries or a down year or something like that. Let's take into account the last two seasons, who are the best at each position. She has at catcher Gary Sanchez,
mm-hmm.
who, I mean, you remember he burst onto the scene
looking like a potential superstar.
And now he is just floating. And I mean, he's hit 16 home runs, but slash 205, 282, 377 with Minnesota last year. And has had, only marginal success as a catcher. But he's available out there. And he does have some pop. I mean, he's not the superstar he looked like when he burst onto the scene. But I think if you want a right-handed DH occasional catcher, you could do a lot worse than have someone like Gary Sanchez on your team.
Yeah, that's probably what he is at this point of his career. Real quick side note, I believe we are seeing the ending days of the WAR stat being used. I think it has a shelf life of like a couple more years. WRC Plus is starting to come in on its corner and take over. And I like that stat a lot better than like WAR. No more WAR. It's finally over. Just wanted to get that off my chest real quick. But Gary Sanchez.
WAR. What is it good for? Absolutely. Just as it's good for some initial research on a player and everything. I don't want to get in trouble with the Sabermetrics crowd who if you dare say anything bad about WAR.
That's going to be my new thing. Every time you say a reference I don't understand, I'm just going to do that little signal for the YouTube audience going right over my head.
Okay, that's a classic song from the 60s. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, that's a 60s. Sully.
That's before my time. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't know about that one. But, yeah, when you think about, like, Gary Sanchez's, like, career trajectory, like you mentioned, it's crazy to think about because he burst onto the scene. He was a two-time All-Star with the New York Yankees back in 2014 and 2016 where he looked like the best – or 2017 and 2019 where he looked like the best power-hitting catcher in baseball and put up an insane slash line, had over 800 OPS, was a 30-home run guy, and looked like he was going to be Posada Plus. I think that's what Stacy wrote in her article. Like, he looked like he was going to be the next great – homegrown star by the Yankees, a middle of the order bat from your catcher. Like, we thought maybe Gary Sanchez was going to be the best offensive catcher maybe since a Buster Posey, maybe a Joe Mauer. And at this point, like, he, like you said, he should just be a platoon power pop because his biggest issue is his strikeouts. He's a strikeout machine, and he was even a strikeout machine when he was the two-time All-Star. But when you bat near 300 with an 800-plus OPS, you can make up for it. But when you bat 205 with a with a 282 OBP and a 377 slugging, you can't have 150 strikeouts to 40 walks at that point. So he just become too much of a negative at this point of his career. Like, I don't know. And he's still super young. Like, that's the thing about Gary Sanchez. He's going to turn 30. He's either 30 or he just turned 30 December 2nd. So he's not even like a guy that's like super old, still in the prime of his career, can still provide that power pop from the right side of the plate. But is it worth it? Is he basically just a Joey Gallo at this point? Like, he's basically just a right-handed Joey Gallo. Like, what's the difference between those two players?
But imagine, let me ask you a question here. Where did Gallo land?
This offseason?
But imagine if you have someone who's left-handed pop, and you have Sanchez to be right-handed pop. You could Voltron. Do you know Voltron? Is that over your head? Okay, you could Voltron that into a decent designated hitter spot.
You could do that. It just depends on the money, I guess. Because Gary Sanchez, if you're getting him for like $5 to $8 million, you're probably okay with it. But if he's asking for like $12 to $15 million, like, that's way too expensive for a guy of Gary Sanchez who just doesn't do enough for you at the plate right now outside of over the fence power.
Well, I mean, but here's what I'll say about that. What I'll say about that is the fact that if he's still unsigned now, then it's going to be February next week.
Yeah.
He may be in full, geez, I need to get somewhere. I need to sign somewhere. I need to reprove myself somewhere. And I'm sorry. I mean, if you're looking for top dollar and you're unemployed in February, maybe you shouldn't stop. Maybe you should stop looking for top dollar and start trying to find the job that will that will make you look the best.
Yeah, once we get around spring training, there's going to be injuries. There's going to be other things for these remaining free agents to sign with contenders and other teams. Like, teams are going to start making moves. Some of these guys are just going to have to wait until probably opening day, right before opening day, to get signed. That happens sometimes with free agents because there's still quality. There's still quality dudes out there on this free agent market that we're going to talk about.
Yuli Gurriel is listed as the best available first baseman at this point. I look at a team like the Twins, who just saw their first base production go way down with the trade of Arise to the Miami Marlins. I look at Gurriel, who, you know, it didn't have a great season last year, but has been a solid player, has multiple World Series appearances, and has had some big hits, and not all of them have been trash can aided. And if I'm looking for, again, a flyer on someone to come in and who has been there and done that for a team that has aspirations of winning, I think Minnesota and Yuli Gurriel seem like a perfect fit for each other.
Yeah, and it seems like, I think there's been some rumors that he's been linked to Miami as well. We know a team that's been starving for offense. I think Gurriel's biggest issue is just probably his lack of production from last year combined with his age. This is someone that's like 39 years old. So if you're bringing him in, you have to very temper your expectations. Maybe you're only expecting 80 to 90 games. I think, like you said, he's perfect for a young team trying to build toward the playoffs. Add him as a veteran presence, still has maybe a little bit of pop, always been a good contact hitter. You just want to hope that you could get somewhere in terms of production between what he did last season and the year before, because obviously he's not going to be an all-star level player anymore, but I also don't think he's as bad as what we saw last year. So if you could kind of get a mix of what you saw the last two seasons for Yuli Gurriel, he's going to be a great flyer for somebody. I probably like him a little bit more than even a Gary Sanchez.
Let's go up the middle. You could have the combination of Josh Harrison and Elvis Andrews right there. Put that right up the middle. A couple of years ago, you've been salivated for something like that. I think Harrison, who, you know, Stacy makes a point that he hits for contact and is an okay hitter, which sometimes having if you're a team, like I look at the Red Sox,
yeah,
with gigantic holes in their infield, having Josh Harrison as a stopgap or Elvis Andrews as a stopgap is not the worst thing in the world, quite frankly. I also look at the San Francisco Giants, who have some issues with their infield as well, both with, you know, departures and age and, you know, some players who didn't quite work out. You know, I think both Andrews and Harrison, both of them who played for Chicago last year, as a stopgap, obviously none of these are long-term solutions, but as a stopgap, you can go a lot worse than filled in with these two guys who have had excellent seasons in the past.
Yeah, these are bridge players. These are pace players. You just need them to hold it down until you find the right piece, either through free agency, through trade, or until you call somebody up, right? When we talk about the Boston Red Sox, everyone says, oh, it's okay that they got rid of Xander because we got Marcelo Meyer coming up in 2 years. Well, guess what? They currently don't have anybody manning that position, so they should go out there and get an Elvis Andrus or a Josh Harrison, because when I was reading Stacy's article and I saw a 5 WAR next to Elvis Andrus, I almost fell out my seat, Sully, because I did not expect him to have that high of a WAR considering he's super old, and I feel like he hasn't been super productive the last few years. But I looked at his stats, they weren't fantastic, but he had like 17 home runs and like 18 stolen bases last year. Like, he's got some pop, he's got some speed, and if you're a team like the Boston Red Sox, like, you could probably do worse than Elvis Andrus. Like, I think nobody is probably worse than Elvis Andrus, so it's like, why not sign these players if you have that need? Because all these remaining players on the free agent market, they're not going to break the bank. They're just going to be happy to get signed.
Yeah. Like someone like Donovan Solano, who she has at third base, to me just screams Tampa Bay Rays. This is a guy who is going to wind up being super inexpensive, was really good a couple of years ago, not so good now. You know, has played a little bit of here, a little infield at second base and first base. I'm just picturing him going to be with the Rays, and he'll wind up putting together like an OPS in the 800s, and people are like, how the hell did this happen? Oh, who the heck did Don? You know, this is like the type of player that Tampa usually just salivates over. And you know, be like, oh man, yeah, I forgot about this guy. And he'll wind up having one very good season. And then a team like the Brewers will sign him to a 4-year deal and overpay, and he'll get hurt. And his great grandkids can go to law school on the Milwaukee Brewers. But the Rays got that one good year sort of stuck in there. And I just look at that.
Yeah, Solano is the perfect kind of guy. If you're a team that's just starving for contact hitters, you just need someone that could put the ball in play and get on base for you, maybe move runners over. Because if you look at Solano, the last 4 years starting in 2019 with his batting average, starting in 2019, 330, then 326, 280, 284. This is someone that could just straight up hit, and maybe he doesn't have the power. Maybe he doesn't have the speed, but just adding someone that you know is not going to be a negative at the plate, be smart with their pitches, has a good approach to the game, that's a positive player in your lineup. And I'd probably, like, we keep going back to Gary Sanchez. Like, if it's Sanchez or Solano, like, yeah, if I need that over-the-fence power, give me Sanchez. But if I'm just in a situation where I got the boppers, I just need someone that can get a hit, get a single so my boppers could bring him home, then give me Solano.
By the way, speaking of someone who we talk about Tampa Bay, and you're from Locked On Arizona, David Peralta still doesn't have a home now. Stacy pointed out the fact that the Dodgers have been kicking the tires on him for a little bit. And we forget the Dodgers, what they won, what? I think they won 170 games last year, and yet they lost it seems like they did. And then they got just bamboozled by San Diego in the division series. I still can't believe that happened. The Dodgers have more holes on their team than you think they do. And yeah, they have a fertile farm system and they have some great players on there, but Peralta strikes me as a player who will probably wind up on a team like LA that you look up and go like, oh, wow, yeah, I forgot about him. And you'll have like, you know, that he'll probably do fine. He'll probably do just fine. Or he could end up in San Francisco, or he could wind up, you know, with St. Louis. But I think, you know, Stacy pointed out the Dodgers. I think he's a good fit for the Dodgers as a short-term sort of bridge pickup.
I don't know why, but hearing fertile farm system gave me a little bit of an ick there. But for David Peralta, freight train, this is someone still a good defensive player in left field, borderline gold glove winner last season. And yeah, so for David Peralta, he's still an elite veteran presence, can still make those. Oh, it was because I remember now what the tangent I was about to go on. It's because I was going to talk about the RBI, Sully. People don't care about the RBI anymore. Nope. I almost got muted by MLB conspiracy or MLB government because no one wants to talk about the RBI. I believe there's an art to an RBI. Yes, if you have all-stars in your lineup who are going to get on base, it's a lot easier to juice up your stats with RBIs. But guess what? There's also players that just are clutch, have that gene, and when they see a man on second, when they see a man on third, they know how to put the ball in play. They know how to bring that guy home, and David Peralta, freight train, is one of those guys. Not everyone is great runners in scoring position. Those are high-pressure moments, and David Peralta is someone that I've always trusted when he did it for the D-backs and came up in those situations.
Speaking about someone with a little bit of pop, just sort of bouncing around here, looks like Luke Voit is still available.
Disgusting.
You know, Luke is
that's your guy right there.
You know, he can hit some out of the park. You know, he's not going to do much for you. He has no value in the field. But if you're a team that has no power, I'm looking at you, Cleveland. I'm looking at you, Miami. I'm looking at you, Pittsburgh. Hell, I'm looking at you, Boston. With very little power on your team, you know, you take your chances, especially if you can pair him with a left-handed bat. You know, people are kind of using the DH as a spot to sort of cycle in, like, you know, it's like a rotating pinch hitter. But I don't know. I'd like a player like Voit if it means, you know, some, you know, a little bit of pop.
He's another Gary Sanchez-esque player because you look at his stats from last season, the 22 home runs in 135 games, that makes you feel really good. And then you see 55 walks to 179 strikeouts. He's another Joey Gallo, Gary Sanchez-esque player. Great pop, can do it as a DH, but you probably don't want to play him 150 games because it's going to be a negative in that. The more you play him, the more of a negative he's going to be. If you play him for 80 games and you get those 20 home runs in those 80 games just as a DH platoon guy, then I think you're healthy. Then I think you're happy because, like you said, he offers no value defensively, really. offensively, he strikes out a lot. But if you like guys and you just need pop and power in your lineup, go get Luke Voit.
Scott Rowland is going to be joining Fred McGriff. I have no problem with either one of those two. None. Fred, I have stronger feelings about Fred McGriff, who I think absolutely belongs in. I have been convinced about Rowland. I understand the arguments for and against, but I see him and I go like, okay, great, yeah, good. I don't think this is an egregious entry. I think it's fine. I'm sure not everyone will agree with it, but again, it's one of those things that you see some of the names down on the ballot. You know, Rodriguez and Ramirez had. Yeah. Infinitely better careers. And but when you know there are already PED users in the hall, it's like, okay, so I guess that's not the issue. Is it just we didn't like Manny and we didn't like A-Rod? Is that really what's going on here? Sheffield, the same thing. You know, Sheffield had a remarkable career, was connected to Balco, but, you know, so was Pudge Rodriguez.
Yeah. If you're pro steroid users getting the Hall of Fame, I even think it's hard for you to justify someone like Manny Ramirez, who failed it like three times.
Yeah,
if you failed it one time, okay, but if you keep failing the steroid test, I'm like, all right, it's probably a little bit harder to make the argument. But I do have a question for you, Sully.
Yeah.
Do you have any issue with like the idea of Scott Rowland, the first year on the ballot? He only gets 10% of the vote. And then people make the argument, well, he only got 10% because the ballot was loaded. But now you look 5 years later, he's elected 76%, but one of the reasons he gets in is because the ballot has dwindled with the amount of talent that's on the ballot this year. So should someone after 5 years be elected to the Hall of Fame when we only think he's a Hall of Famer when the ballot is looking weak? Because when we stack him up against other great MLB players, you're like, okay, this guy's not one of the 10 best players on this list right now. So he's not even going to get more than 10% of the vote. But 5 years later, when the ballot dwindles with quality talent, now we think he's good enough to make the Hall of Fame. I'd rather him just never make it if you think he's only good when there's lesser talent on the ballot.
I understand what you're saying. And I do think there's some validity to that. I think Scott was incredibly boosted by the fact that none of the first ballots, with the exception of Beltran, even made a dent, really.
No.
And he was aided by the fact that some of the players in the past, you know, there's no more Clemens or Bonds discussions or anything like that. But I also think that there are some players who need a little bit of time to have their candidacy dissected and debated. Burt Blyleven is my favorite example of that, who got in the 13th or 14th ballot. And he didn't have the win total. He didn't have a lot of the totals that people normally looked at. He's top five all-time strikeouts. He's unbelievable stats he had up and down. He very rarely was considered one of the top two or three pitchers in the league. So there was this aura about him that he was a very good pitcher who had a very long career. But I think it took people a while to analyze his stats and sort of remove yourself from some of the more traditional stats to see his value. I think for some people, it took a few years of debating and analyzing his stats and everything like that to get him in a position where he is that his candidacy is clear to a lot of players. He also was lost in the shuffle because there was all the screaming about, you know, should Clemens and Bonds be in? What the hell is Harold Baines doing in there? And all of that. So he kind of was like the middle child looking at mommy and daddy fighting, cowering in the back of the station wagon. I think that I get totally what you're saying, but I also think a candidate like Scott Rowland needs to have some reflection and some debate about him. My friend Richie Duncan, who has been a guest on the show before, has a very simple criteria for the Hall of Fame, which is this: are you famous? If so, yes.
Okay, that's kind of interesting.
And like I told him, and I said Scott Rowland, he said, I don't know who that is, not famous, doesn't get in. And I said, what about Jose Canseco? And he says he deserves a wing, an entire wing of the museum. So if he's famous, it's a Hall of Fame. Then anyone famous in. If you're not famous, get out.
Well, the only issue is baseball players are getting less famous as the years go on. Eventually, we might not have any Hall of Famers.
Yeah, well, guess what his sport is? Hockey.
I don't know anybody, man. Yeah, I work in hockey.
There you go. There you go. But I think more egregious than, you know, I mean, look, at I've supported Roland. I've not supported him. I've gone back and forth on him. And as I said, he got in, and my initial reaction was, I didn't. When Jim Rice, one of my favorite players growing up, got in, I got choked up. I got a little teary-eyed when Jim Rice got in. There's a couple of people that made me go, wait, what? Who got in?
Isn't that kind of weird, though? You got to debate and analyze the numbers for 5 years before deciding if someone's a Hall of Famer. I feel like doing a 10-year period is just way too long. I feel like it should be like 3 years. And then if after 3 years, like, I don't think we should have a limit on the number of people we should vote on and how many people.
That I agree on. That I 100% agree on. I think that he was hurt by the ballot. I don't think there's 10 on the ballot is a completely arbitrary number. What if there are 13 qualifying players on the ballot, or what if there are none? I don't understand what 10 achieves.
Should it be pass fail? Either you're a Hall of Famer or not. I don't really understand.
Helton, who I think is a Hall of Famer, missing by 11 votes. What that means is, I mean, Helton family, make your reservations next year to go to upstate New York. I mean, there's no way someone's going to get to within 11 votes of the Hall of Fame and then not make it. He played in Coors Field.
That's the only thing. That's the only reason you don't think he's a Hall of Famer is if you think he's overinflated by Coors Field.
But I think that there have been players who played in Coors Field who didn't have his overall numbers. Now, you can point out, okay, he didn't get to 400 home runs. He didn't get to 3,000 hits. You know, he finished with a career OPS of 953.
Yeah, it's insane.
You know, I mean, his numbers and his numbers aren't just, this is not Dante Bichette, okay? This is not someone who was okay on the road and a superstar at home. He's someone who's a consistent player wherever he played.
I got the splits if you want to hear them, Sully.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, because he's definitely better at home, but it wasn't like he was a scrub at on the road. Because at home, 345 average, 1048 OPS. On the road, 287 average, 855 OPS. So if his road numbers were a full season numbers, he's still putting up all-star level numbers.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, 857 career OPS, you're going to be putting up some tremendous numbers, even if you're no matter what park you're playing in.
And that's for your careers. That means in his prime, he was probably putting up like a 925 OPS on the road or something.
Yeah.
Like
yeah, because he had some down years. His final 2 years weren't that great. You know, I mean, but again, my point is this. He is a player who has put up great numbers year in and year out. And the core, you know, how many things are we supposed to put against someone? Oh, did they use roids? Oh, did they play in Coors? Oh, did they? And how about giving Todd Helton some credit that he played his entire career in Colorado? That when he had the chance that he didn't, you know, he didn't cash out and demand a trade or somewhere else like that. No, there's a guy, you know, from 1997 to 2013 was a Rocky. You know, I mean, this is, we should celebrate players like that.
Yeah, his numbers are absolutely insane. When you look at like his numbers are just insane. If you look at like 2000, 2004, he puts up just immaculate numbers. But the player on the list that I kind of want to talk about, Sully, just because from like a sad boy perspective, because he didn't get any votes, zero votes. And I want to just talk about like the trajectory of his career from how it started to how it finished. And that is actually someone from your favorite team, Sully, or I think at least your dad's favorite team, the San Francisco Giants, Matt Cain. Because when you think of Matt Cain, this was someone that was like one of the best pitchers in baseball, had that perfect game, signed that massive contract. You look, he was a two-time All-Star. He basically, for a four-year period, looked like a Cy Young candidate, top five pitcher in baseball every single season. And then by the time of age 30, Matt Cain was basically done in Major League Baseball. And he was just very, because last year on the ballot, I believe Tim Lincecum was on it. And if you look at both of their careers side by side, like both of them had massive peaks, both of them Cy Young candidates. Tim Lincecum won a couple Cy Youngs, both of them World Series champions, both of them signed massive contracts, and both of them were pretty much done by the time they turned the age of 30, which is just insane. And both of them had injuries to blame. So I just think when I look at the last 2 years of ballot, your father's favorite team, the Giants, Tim Lincecum and Matt Cain. When I think about how I thought about them when they were like 26, 27 years old and they felt like on top of the world, and you're like, this guy's going to be in my life for the next 10 years. Then the way both of their careers just kind of abruptly ended because of injuries, and the idea that neither one of them was good past the age of 30, I think it's just honestly shocking. And I just wanted to give some love to Matt Cain because he was really good and his career ended kind of sadly.
Yeah. Well, it's the danger. I mean, you see that. I mean, look at what Brandon Webb with the Diamondbacks won a Cy Young Award, nearly won a second, and then he pitched one game. Bye.
Yeah, he's one of those greatest what-if players that could have been, because he was right there, like, taking the mantle, taking the torch after the Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling era, and Brandon Webb was, like, a two-time Cy Young Award winner, or, like, right there in the mix for Cy Youngs, and it's crazy how his career ended as well.
Well, it's crazy how this ended. You and I wondered if we were going to have enough to do one show, and here we are.
Good for the rest of the week now.
Yeah, going over again. Miller, tell people where they can listen to your show.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at CareerThomas24. Follow the show account on Twitter, Locked On Diamondbacks. We're on all your streaming platforms, of course, and we're also on YouTube, Locked On Diamondbacks, on there as well.
And we're at Locked On MLB Pods on Twitter and Instagram. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Breaking down all sorts of goodness with Miller Thomas. And oh, wait, I forgot to say one other thing. Holy cow. Thanks so much for making us your first listen. For your second listen, have it be Locked On MLB Prospects. Lindsey Crosby, he's a prospect encyclopedia, and he's going deep on the MLB stars of tomorrow. Check him out wherever you get your podcasts. Oh, got that under the wire. Talking about all the goodness of the Hall of Fame and other things. This has been Locked On MLB. I'm your pal Sully. That's Miller Thomas. Let's fist bump for another week.